On the Radar, an Eagle News program that takes you beyond the streets and brings you closer to national and international breaking news as it unfolds. Tune in every Monday to Friday from 1 to 2:30.
A very good afternoon and a warm welcome to On The Radar, your trusted midday news bulletin, right here on Eagle FM. I am your host, Dafa Happy Juju, here to deliver to you today's news bulletin. Now, it's Tuesday, May the 13th, and you're tuned into our second bulletin of the day, broadcasting live from 1300 hours to 1430 every Monday to Friday. Now, as always, we are here to bring you the latest headlines, in-depth reporting, and expert analysis to keep you well-informed and ahead of the curve with insightful commentary. Coming up on today's program, the Bank of Namibia unveils its newly modified 50 Namibian dollar banknote. We'll break down what's new and why it matters. We'll also take a closer look at cross-border public health concerns as Angola's cholera outbreak continues to raise alarms in neighboring Namibia. Now, plus new insights into the rise of AI in Southern African newsrooms. Who's using the tools and what it means for the future of journalism? Now, whether you're on the road, at the office, or taking a well-deserved break, do stay with us. This is On The Radar, your news, your voice, your perspective. And remember, you can also be part of the news. That is by dialing in our studio number 083-288-401 to share your views, ask your questions, or react to the day's big stories. Now leading the news bulletin this afternoon, the Bank of Namibia launched the 50 banknote yesterday. Now speaking at the event, Cindy Philippus, who is the Deputy Director for Currency and Banking Operations at the Bank of Namibia, pointed out that there is a framework or policy that governs the bank's update of banknotes. She also pointed out the significance of the $50 banknote launch, one of them being the high demand of it by the public, and addressing some of the questions that the public may have regarding the launch of the modified $50 banknote. Let's now take a listen to Cindy Philippus.
Question that we normally get, a frequent question that we normally get as the Currency Management and Banking Operations Department is, what informs the bank's decision to print money? Well, the process is quite straightforward and consists of four elements. Firstly, the legal framework, which consists of the Bank of Namibia Act, Act 1 of 2020, and which sets out the mandate under which we operate. From an operational framework perspective, we have the bank's currency design and production policy that provides guidelines and standards for the design and production of the banknotes. So I want to lay a myth to rest here. We don't just remove Captain Hendrik Witbooi and add Cindy Philippus. There is a framework, there is a process that governs how we update our banknotes. A key element that also influences our replenishment is currency in circulation and the quality of banknotes circulating within the country at a particular time. In addition to that, ladies and gentlemen, the lifespan and currency stock levels, which are calculated using a sophisticated currency forecasting model, influences the final element, ultimately the demand for currency by the public. The currency forecasting model works on a 3-year average issuance and calculates the stock requirements there on taking into consideration factors, as I said, like your lifespan of the banknotes as well as inflation. So this is how we came to the decision to replenish the $50 banknote. All these measures, ladies and gentlemen, enable the bank to guarantee a high-quality banknote with advanced security features to prevent counterfeiting and uphold public confidence in our national currency. What is the significance of the $50 banknote being launched today? Well, the $50 banknote holds a strategic position within our currency system, as it is a middle-range denomination, and it is widely used for practical daily transactions. The high demand from the public underscores its vital role in everyday trade and commerce. I normally think of the $50 note as the middle child, often overlooked, sometimes not seen, but when not present, you're very, very much, you'll feel that they're not present. So banknotes are not just issued at random. Contrary, to ensure that the $50 banknote is recognized as legal tender, the banknote underwent a formal gazetting process in accordance with the Act and the bank's policy. This process ensured that the banknote is officially authorized for circulation and classified as legal tender, given the change to governor's signature. Another question that requires addressing is, why launch the same banknote? It is not the same banknote. There has been a change to a key public recognition feature, and that is governor's signature. In accordance with international standards and best practices, the signature of the sitting governor must be depicted on banknotes. This not only reinforces the integrity of the banknote, but acts as an authentication mechanism for the public because the signature is easily recognizable. It also acts as a robust anti-counterfeiting measure. Therefore, upgrading the banknote with the governor's signature is not just a formality. Once again, it provides authenticity and legal backing, which are essential to instilling confidence in our currency. Ladies and gentlemen, with the launch of the modified $50 banknote today, the bank is completing the full set of the JG banknote series. An exercise that commenced with the issuance of the $10 in 2022, followed by the $20, $200, and $100 modified banknotes, the last of which was launched and issued in Lüderitz last year. Governor, I want to take this opportunity to congratulate you on this significant achievement. In conclusion, I would like to leave you with a quote from Ken Blanchard, a renowned author and consultant known for his work on leadership and organizational behavior, who coined the phrase, "Cash is not currency. It's not just currency. It is the oxygen of survival in a world that breathes transactions." This quote underscores the power of cash in shaping individual lives and global economies, allowing for freedom of choice and endless opportunities. As we navigate the digital payment landscape, we are cognizant that cash will remain an indispensable payment instrument. However, we also know that there is a need for cash to metamorphosize itself. In order to adapt to ever-changing needs of society, which will likely influence how physical currency is designed, produced, and secured. For the time being, however, we can confidently assert that cash will hold and will continue to hold a dominant position, or in the Namibian context, cash will remain queen.
Governor of the Bank of Namibia, Johannes Kavahab, says that on the insurance front, the central bank continues to observe an increase in currency circulation in the post-COVID period. In 2024, the Namibian economy saw a 6.9% increase in currency circulation, rising from 5.2 billion Namibian dollars in 2023 to 5.6 billion Namibian dollars. He further noted that in terms of safeguarding the Namibian currency from counterfeiting, it is equally significant to note a 10.7% decline in counterfeit banknotes during the same period. Over the past 3 years, the Bank of Namibia has systematically upgraded 4 key denominations, the $10 banknote, the $20 banknote, the $100 banknote, and the $200 banknote. Yesterday, the central bank completed this circle with unveiling of the modified $50 banknote, which is a proactive response to evolving market demands. Let's now hear from the governor himself.
The Issuance of Currency is a Sovereign Act. It is enshrined in Article 28 of the Namibian Constitution and further articulated in Section 38 of the Bank of Namibia Act. These legal provisions are the legal scaffolding upon which the stability of our economy rests. However, our mandate goes beyond the mere issuance. It encompasses the safeguarding of value, the deterrence of counterfeiting, and the maintenance of public trust. Let me commence with the cornerstone of this mandate, that of safeguarding the value of the Namibia dollar. The central bank is tasked with upholding low and stable inflation, which is essential for preserving the purchasing power of our banknotes and our coins. This commitment remains steadfast despite recent global challenges that have reintroduced uncertainties and increased market volatility. We approach our responsibilities with diligence to anchor inflation expectations and cultivate a stable monetary environment that supports economic growth while also safeguarding the value of the Namibian dollar. Ultimately, the strategy reinforces confidence in our national currency. On the issuance front, we continue to observe an increase in currency circulation in the post-COVID period. In 2024, the Namibia economy saw a 6.9% increase in currency circulation, rising from 5.2 billion Namibian dollars in 2023 to 5.6 billion Namibian dollars. This growth is indicative not only of economic expansion, but of the confidence that the Namibians place in the currency as a medium of exchange. In terms of safeguarding our currency from counterfeiting, it is equally significant to note a 10.7% decline in counterfeit banknotes during the same period. This development calls attention to the efficacy of our security measures. Counterfeit deterrence is a matter of public trust and institutional credibility. When citizens know that the currency they hold is secure, they transact with confidence, and that confidence is the bedrock of economic activity. Therefore, the issuance of secure, high-quality currency is a strategic imperative. Over the past 3 years, the Bank of Namibia has systematically upgraded 4 denominations, the 10 Namibia dollar, the 20 Namibia dollar, 100 Namibia dollar, and the $200 notes. Today, we complete the cycle with the unveiling of the modified 50 Namibia dollar banknote, which is a proactive response to evolving market demands, as previously outlined by the Deputy Director of Currency Operations. So we do not modify currency for the sake of modifying. If somebody feels that, wow, so you've decided this morning we're going to just take the $50 banknote and put in the governor's signature. No, we needed to order new $50 banknote currencies, banknotes, and because we've reached that reordering point, if a new one comes in, it needs to bear the signature of the current sitting governor. That's why we have got this event today. So someone called me and said, are you really modified because you are there? It's not the case. If that's the case, we should have modified when I joined the bank 5 years ago. So we were waiting until there's a demand, and now we've got a demand for the $50 notes. We've ordered them, and we have signed them. That's why we have got this event. By now, we should be aware that the regular enhancement of banknotes is anchored in global best practice. Central banks around the world have recognized that currency design must be dynamic, evolving in tandem with technological advancements and emerging threats. In fact, monetary authorities do so every 6 to 8 years to be ahead of the curve. In our case, the last time we upgraded our banknotes was in 2012, and our coins have not been upgraded since the issuance in the 1990s. As technology advances, so do the tactics counterfeiters use. This ongoing challenge requires us to stay proactive by continuously innovating and updating our security measures. Enhanced features such as holographic stripes, color-shifting inks, microtext, tactile elements, and transparent windows has significantly improved our ability to deter counterfeiting. These innovations send a clear message: our currency is secure and should not be tampered with. Furthermore, updated currency must be compatible with modern financial systems, including ATMs, parking meters, and vending machines. Even as we move toward digital payments, physical currency must remain durable, functional, and relevant in an increasingly digital economy.
So what is the significance of the central bank's decision to modify banknotes after time, and how does Namibia's currency compare to other developing countries? Let's turn to economist Lucas Kumonika to enlighten us on this. Good afternoon, Lucas Kumonika, and welcome to On the Radar News Bulletin.
Good afternoon to you and your viewer. It's good to be here today.
Mm-hmm. Now, yesterday, the Bank of Namibia launched the modified $50 banknote. Now, what are the key economic reasons behind the central bank's decision to modify or upgrade banknotes over time?
Okay. Thank you so much for the question. Maybe the reason for the modification, mostly the modification is mostly centered around the security, the security features of the, or the security measures of the currency. That is to say, the currency need to be safeguarded against the counterfeit.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, the technology is quite of advancing, and the counterfeiting activities may also be advancing, or the counterfeiting people that want to counterfeit the notes may come up with new methods and new ways of doing it. So it's really important that the currency is modified to counterfeit such activities. And also, if the currency is safeguarded against such activities, it also increase the public trust and the credibility of the central bank per se. So it's very critical that the security features of the currency are enhanced.
Now, the Bank of Namibia also reported a 10.7% decline in counterfeit cases. What does this perhaps say about Namibian currencies?
Yeah, it says a lot in terms of the credibility of the institution, which is oversighting or the affair of the currency. So it says a lot about the currency itself in terms of the public trust, in terms of holding the currency itself. Because if you hold the currency that you know that it's counterfeited against, that it will increase the public trust in terms of that, and it will also somehow it will ensure that people have currency. Because they have trust, they will have currency that they need to do transactions in the economy. So it does not only enhance the trust of the public in the currency, but it also promotes economic activity. Since now people have trust in this currency, therefore they have now also, it becomes easy to do transactions since there is trust in the currency.
Mm. Now,
It also just boosts economic activities.
Okay.
Yeah.
Lucas, what does the high demand for a specific denomination, such as a $50 banknote, tell us about consumer behavior or spending patterns here in Namibia?
It may say a lot in terms of the spending pattern, although we have seen that although there is an increase in terms of these. There is also an increase in terms of other form of payment,
mm-hmm.
For example, the digital payments and all other alternative payments that can be used in terms of the currency itself.
Mm-hmm.
But perhaps what it says is that because not to say it's not per se it's the highest currency,
mm-hmm.
But it's to say at least it's the one the consumer may prefer then to have. Like money that is a note, than the money that is a little bit consolidated than loose money, maybe of 20, 30 informed and other things.
Mm.
So this is also despite the fact that maybe also when you as you move up the currency,
mm-hmm.
as you move up maybe $100,
$200.
$200 also, it may say a little bit about, it may infer a little bit something about the income categories of the people that you have. Because despite the person that, maybe the person can afford a $50, but they don't want it, maybe lose 20, 30,
mm-hmm.
or 20, or 20, or 20, 20, $10 mm-hmm. or coins. So it says a lot that maybe people prefer to have consolidated currency than the one that is disaggregated per se.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it also tells something about the spending pattern. So it may say that in a certain income category,
mm-hmm.
The spending pattern may be increasing as in that sense because the demand for money, although may not necessarily be one-on-one, it's implying that there is also an increase in the demand for goods and services. Because we demand the currency to buy goods and services.
Mm-hmm. Now, the Bank of Namibia mentioned a 6.9% increase in currency circulation since 2023. What could be some of the broader economic implications of this increase? And does it perhaps point to other trends such as inflation or increased cash dependency?
All right. such increases... of course, we know that when the central bank is cognizant of the fact that it shouldn't increase the money in circulation, they have to look at some facts. Say, for example, they look at the level of economic activity
mm-hmm.
as measured by GDP. So the central bank put into account the level of economic activity per se, GDP, so that you don't have a situation that whereby you have more money in circulation,
mm-hmm.
More money in circulation than your GDP. So if you happen to have a situation where you have more money than your GDP or than the size of your economy, you are likely to create inflation. But of course, we know that, it may not be the concern, especially at this moment. Of course, during COVID, we had the case of somehow we saw how the inflation was peaking, especially on the food item and so forth and the other item.
Yeah.
But after COVID, we have seen that inflation is contained. So the increase of money in circulation is not necessarily to say it's not a threat at this moment,
yeah.
Because we see that the inflation is contained. So the concern will only come when the inflation is starting to peak, then of course, but does not necessarily contain a threat. I mean, should pose a threat, because the act is clear on how the government, not the government, but the central bank can intervene to withdraw money in circulation. Should they also have other mechanisms that they use? Should they know that maybe inflation is starting to peak and they need to control it? They have the open market operation, you know, the selling of security. So the increase of money in circulation does not really pose the rate of inflation at this moment.
Mm.
But of course, I believe that the central bank is cognizant of that.
Okay.
And should they need for them to intervene, they have used those tools that they have at their disposal to contain inflation.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And lastly, Lucas, why is it so important for education or public education and awareness when introducing updated banknotes, for instance? Some might actually see it as a waste of money.
Yeah, it is important to educate, as I said, because the central bank is mandated by the act to do so,
mm-hmm.
But it's not just an exercise that it's doing. But the most critical thing is that maybe the public needs to be aware of.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's just those few, that the reason behind
yeah.
that, because and if you have the reason behind the launching of those currencies or the establishment or the modification of those currencies, because these are, you know, these, for example, to contain active counterfeiting activities, to ensure that it's secured, because if you have to weigh the cost and benefit thereof, if we have to say, okay, we save resources, we do not have to launch the currency because we are wasting resources, but the activity that comes, I mean, the loss that comes with the counterfeiting activity
mm-hmm.
may exceed the cost that you are spending on enhancing the security of your currency.
Yeah.
So, and also, it's important that also the public understand that it can get in the system, because it's also for the public to know what are those security features are there.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe security features that are for themselves are able to detect. The public itself is able to detect also those. Maybe the education also need to increase that component of to the public to say what are the things that you look at, they say, for you to detect those also counterfeited notes. And also not only that, but also maybe the public education should just in general
mm-hmm.
encompass the function of the central bank and the benefit and the stability and all the benefits, the sovereignty that comes with this function of issuance of currency.
Mm. Okay. Lucas Kumanika, thank you so much for always educating us on economic matters right here on the Reader News Bulletin.
Thank you for having me.
Okay. We are stepping away for a moment, but don't go anywhere. On the Radar, we'll be back in just a few minutes with more news.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, You can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Listen to Eagle FM in Lüderitz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Omthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104.0.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Welcome back. Now, to gain a clearer understanding of how journalists in Namibia are integrating artificial intelligence or AI into their daily routines for information gathering and distribution, Peter Desales from DW Academy explained that a recent study was conducted to assess the impact of AI in the newsrooms and how these tools are being used. Desales noted that while Namibian journalists are not using AI tools as extensively as some of their SADC counterparts, usage has been increased in recent times. A significant finding from the study was the gender divide in AI adoption. More men than women express interest in using AI tools. Additionally, the most enthusiastic adopters of AI were from the radio and other broadcasting media sectors. Let's now listen to key takeaway from this insights.
How we use Zimbabwe and media. So us is in this case the NMT Media Foundation and DW Academy. The motivation was to get a better understanding of what is the extent of usage, what is it being used for, and how does it change the newsrooms. And with all things AI, one of the problems is it moves very quickly and it is embedded into a bigger context. That makes it a little bit tricky for us. We're still kind of trying to really fine-tune our analysis before we publish the consolidated report. We've kind of shared the survey data in October last year at the first one, and we'll look at a bit of a comparison here as well, and I'll show mainly the numbers, but I'll try and also add a little bit of the context that we've seen in terms of what is being done in newsrooms and how is there also maybe a difference between what we're seeing in Malawi, in Namibia, and then in Zimbabwe. So as we are in the university, I'll follow protocol and give you a little bit of background on the data. So we did a survey between probably August and October last year, 136 responses. We tried very hard to surpass the Zimbabweans, but we stayed one short in terms of respondents. Then we did 5 interviews in each country, 15 in total, mainly with editors and newsroom managers and a couple of senior journalists to understand what the effect is on the newsroom and what the extent also of regulation, etc. is a key question always. What are you doing as a newsroom? What do you know as a newsroom? And also, is there any regulations? Then in terms of age, gender, and years of experience, we saw that there is a pretty much statistically normal distribution, with one exception is that if you look at the gender of the respondents, in Malawi, we had a lot more men responding to the survey than women. We think that the sample is slightly overrepresenting AI users, because if you get a survey and you say, I'm not using AI, you're more likely not to respond. While if you use AI, you feel you have something to contribute to the survey, you will respond. But beyond that, I think we have a relatively good, the size is okay to, let's say, generalize, in not in terms of exact percentages, but to get a good feeling of how much is it actually being used. And whenever we have discussions, for example, in the past few days, here at the workshop, we see that what we're seeing in the data here and what we're seeing in the discussions and in the workshops, etc., actually matches up. Most of the respondents came from radio or online media, a couple of newspaper, but that is also increasingly tricky to distinguish. If we look at the NBC, there's online, there's TV, there's radio, etc. Rather few we had from academics, fact-checkers, and freelancers. Most came from established media houses. So first question is obviously, do we use AI for journalism? And 84% of the people, so 8 out of 10 of the respondents said, we use AI for journalistic work. 77% of them use it daily or weekly. So this means AI is part of the daily routines of most of the journalists. And by the way, these numbers vary slightly between the countries, but not substantially. 24% of these journalists said they've received some form of training on AI. So that is three out of 10 have received training. And then the last question that we found interesting is, does your newsroom have guidelines of what you do with AI or what you shouldn't do? And in our case, 1 out of 9, so 13% of the respondents, 1 out of 10 said yes, the newsroom has guidelines. From the more detailed comments, we've also seen that these guidelines might not always be specific to AI, but there's some form of regulation and orientation around AI. This might have changed because, for example, in the case of Namibia, at the time of doing these the interviews as well, there was no media house that actually had a published, established guideline on the use of AI. By now, we know that the Namibian, for example, has guidelines. I think NBC is also working on that, but I'll leave that to the panel discussion. And these guidelines also, because the technology changes, are not, once you've done them, you're done. Given the very rapidly changing technology, it is kind of a living document where you constantly need to reflect, okay, all of a sudden, the AI technology can offer this or that. Is that something we want to do as media? So what do we use AI for? What you usually see in studies on AI and journalism is that there's a differentiation between news gathering, content production, and distribution. News gathering is all use cases where journalists or newsrooms gather information, research in particular. Production is where you process the information, so editing the video segment that is filmed here today would then be part of the production process. And then finally, distribution is when it comes to the distribution channels where you actually interact with the audiences. And what we see in Namibia is that there's very little use cases for distribution, and the main part is content production and news gathering. But the content production part, the single biggest use case is editing. So it is a reporter sends me a draft article, and I'm an editor, sub-editor, for example, at a newspaper or at a radio station, and I use AI to edit that story, meaning to take out the grammatical errors, to fix the punctuation or to adapt it to the style of the media house. Analysis of content is the second one, information discovery, so things like searching information about things on the web, understanding issues, transcription and translation. We bundled those up. It would actually be interesting to separate them again to see how much that is a big one. Content production in the sense of drafting text is another one. Search and sense making, again, news gathering. So, for example, I have to report on the consumer price index, the example today, that's why I mention it, and inflation, and I need to understand how does this data work. And I ask ChatGPT to give me an explanation, how does the consumer price index work to make sense of the data.
Hey, And now we pause here, take a trip to the marketplace, but we'll be back soon with yet more news. So stay tuned and don't go anywhere.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081.
Onkundana ombwanawa kani hauto. Owa pumbwa oshimaliwa meendelelo. Ndele ouna osheendiso. Ouna aniilonga ya pumbwa okufutwa. Ashike mboka ina onjo doye otaende kashona. Ngele onkalamwenyo otayi nyengana, Autocash otayi ningi ompu. Tu etela ohauto yoye eto pewa epresenda 45 dongushu yoshiendiso shoye. Mule ashike wimintetilo 45. Ino pumbwa oka payslip nenge o statement ayombanga. Ohauto yoye ashike. Mona omula oshimaliwa ethimbo weshi pumbwa.
Easy money.
Tu dengela nena ko nora hamano imwe ne nora nora hamano heari hamano. Ano ko nora hamano imwe ne nora nora hamano heari hamano. Oshipulera ko Autocash.
Oulio mnangeshefa ne wahara kushivifa oma akuro ye kupitira mohorike radio station na weyo Eagle FM. Enya mkulo olongaha. Ninge kwa tafano na Monica kushikondosho ipindi kono rahitatu imwe, heari imwe, ne heari, imwe imwe no hamano. That is 0817147116. Mwamberewa kono rahitatu natu, mbali o hetatu vatatu, ne nola no natu. Nenge tumo emaila ku monica@eaglefm.com.na opo umone oshijemo shiri nawa.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. Angola is currently facing a significant cholera outbreak that has spread rapidly across the country since January 2025. As of 23 March 2025, a total of 8,543 cholera cases and 359 deaths have been reported, resulting in a case fatality rate of 3.9%. Alarmingly, one-third of the fatalities have occurred within communities outside of health facilities. The outbreak has now affected 16 of Angola's 21 provinces, impacting people of all ages. However, children and young people are bearing the heaviest burden. The 6 to 14 year age gap is the most affected, accounting for 1,976 cases, that is 23.1% of total cases, followed by 15 to 24 year group with 1,850 cases, that is 21.7% of total cases, and the 25 to 34 year group with 1,475 cases, giving a percentage of 17.3%. Now, males make up a slight majority of the reported cases, totaling 4,725 cases, or 55.3%. In response, the Ministry of Health in Angola, with support from the World Health Organization, WHO, and other partners, have launched a coordinated outbreak response. This includes active case detection, the deployment of rapid response teams, community engagement and initiatives, and an ongoing oral cholera vaccination campaign. Now, with the rainy season in progress and the high levels of cross-border movement with neighboring countries, the World Health Organization has assessed the risk of further transmission in Angola and surrounding regions as very high. Authorities continue to emphasize the need for urgent and sustained public health interventions to curb the spread of the disease. Now, due to cross-border movement between Namibia and Angola, there is a need to sensitize the public on this. For this reason, we've reached out to the Ministry of Health and Social Services, PRO, Walters Kamaya. Good afternoon, Mr. Walters Kamaya, and welcome to On the Radar News Bulletin.
Good afternoon to you too, Happy.
Now, the World Health Organization has detected a cholera outbreak within Angola. And now, given the proximity to Angola and of Namibia to Angola and frequent cross-border movement, how would you assess Namibia's current risk of a cholera outbreak?
Yes, thank you very much. We might say it's good to be vigilant.
Mm.
It's good to be alert instead of being reluctant. As we all know that we usually say that prevention is better than cure.
Mm-hmm.
So we all know that Angola is our neighbor.
Yeah.
So the language that we must speak is to stick to cholera preventive measures, as well as see to it that we practice hygiene,
mm-hmm.
such as drinking boiled water, such as washing our hands with running water and soap,
mm-hmm.
And so forth. It's good to be alerted. However, the ministry is prepared because we may all be aware that we registered a case or we identified one case which was fully recovered in Opuo.
Mm-hmm.
And thereafter, there was no any other secondary case. So the ministry is prepared. The ministry has already activated its all pillars to be able to respond to any emergency that may arise. But however, the public is also advised to bring their part also to live a happy life, such as practicing basic hygiene, drinking boiled water, washing of our hands regularly, especially after touching the surfaces, as well as avoid or eating well-cooked food.
Mm. Have there been any community engagement or public information campaigns in northern Namibia to raise awareness about cholera symptoms and prevention?
There has been public education initiatives that the Minister of Health and Social Services has been conducting throughout in conjunction with UNICEF. Some time back when we had one case in Opuo, the ministry and UNICEF intensified the issue of response, whereby there was public education awareness that was going on. And then even now, we still have people on the ground that keeps on visiting our people and share with them this information that basic hygiene is important to strengthen our health.
Mm. Mr. Kamaya, what are the symptoms of cholera that people should be on the lookout for, especially in northern Namibia?
Yes, most of them is that they running stomach, and then those are the symptoms, dehydration and so forth. So once these symptoms do exhibit or do appear, we advise such a one to visit the nearest facility for medical attention and for possible treatment.
Okay. Now, what additional support or resources would be most helpful to prevent cholera transmission into Namibia?
Yes, the support that the ministry is giving is for us. We all know that the ministry has embarked on a massive campaign to say that your health begins with you.
Mm.
So in most cases, like I have said, it's before our health. It should be our concern. So once your health is a concern to somebody, not your own, it becomes problematic. I would advise that as members of the public, we have to see to it that first of all, when we experience the symptoms, first and foremost that we should do is to visit the nearest facilities, as well as try to practice preventive measures or things like keep to drink safe, drink clean water,
mm-hmm.
as well as drinking of treated water or boiled water,
mm-hmm.
And so forth. We might say that if there are mitigations in place, sometimes there might be challenges here and there to prevent things. That's why we appeal to the community to resort to the basics that they have at their disposal.
Okay. Mr. Kamaya, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Reader News Bulletin.
Thank you for having me. Bye-bye.
Okay. Now, as you headed over there, sanitation is very important for community members to ensure that cholera outbreak is not spread to other parts and other communities. With that being said, we pause here and take a trip to the marketplace. When we do return, we'll be coming with more news.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's #1 talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's #1 talk radio station.
Welcome back. And now for some education-related news. The Oshela Senior Secondary School walked away with a total of 22 awards from Oangwena Regional Award Ceremony that was held in Helao Nafide Business Expo on Friday, the 9th of May 2025. The school received the trophy for the best grade 12 school in Oangwena region, ranking at position number 1 in the Namibia Senior Secondary Certificate Advanced Subsidiary results for the 2024 academic year in Oangwena region. Now, Shikunde Combined Schools came in at position number 2 and Shitua Secondary School at position number 3. Additionally, Oshela Senior Secondary School received an award for best hostel in 2024. A total of 13 learners were awarded for their best performance in individual subjects, which includes 7 grade 11 learners and 6 grade 12 learners. Teachers were not exempted either, as 7 teachers from the school were awarded for excellent performance. The school principal, Simon Kau Kungwa Shilongo, attributed the excellent performance to a number of factors, such as staff's and learners' commitment and discipline, support by parents and stakeholders, and long hours of sacrifices by teachers over weekends and holidays to teach the learners. Let's now engage entrepreneurship teacher at Oshela Senior Secondary School, that is Letu Ndatewapo, on their achievements. Good afternoon, ma'am, and welcome to On The Reader News Bulletin.
Oh, thank you. Good afternoon.
Congratulations on your award, as Oshela Senior Secondary School came in position number 1. Now, give us more on this. What is it that you guys have been doing, or the school has been doing, in order to actually produce learners that are being awarded?
Okay, well, thank you very much. I think a lot of us are aware that in order for a school to be successful or to excel, hard working and dedication from both sides is not an exception. And for our school last year, that was 2024, we have been really working hard, as well as trying to be more dedicated when it's coming to academics, as well as non-academics. Yeah. But then we have really been putting in more effort, especially holiday classes, afternoon classes, as well as trying by all means to teach our kids and be able to finish the syllabus that's before the examination or the commencement of the national or the final exam.
Now, I do understand that you also, the school also got an award for best hostel. What measures perhaps have you been implementing to ensure that the children or the learners are actually well taken care of, those who are in the hostel?
Okay, well, learners are not really difficult to deal with, provided that you told them what is expected of them, as well as the supervisors. These are the hostel supervisors, working closely with the learners. But this was a result of equal commitment, both from the hostel superintendent, the supervisors, as well as the learners. Learners know exactly that they need to be 100% engaged in the cleanliness of the hostel, be it at the dormitories as well as the kitchen side. Learners clean their blocks, especially during weekends, whereby the cleaners or the institutional workers are actually on weekends. So our learners, I can say they are self-driven, but this came as a result of supervisors that are more engaged and are working closely with the learners. All I can say is that as long as the learners knows what is expected from them, then obviously results will always be there.
Indeed. Now, the awards, is it something that Oshela Senior Secondary School was surprised, or is it something that you kind of anticipated, considering the work effort that you mentioned you've been putting in?
Okay, well, personally, I can say it did not come as a surprise, looking at the time that we've spent with our learners. When you really work hard, you try by all means to put in more effort and engage the learners, the parents as well. You won't really be surprised, because I think, if not mistaken, 2023 results were as well not really bad, because most of our teachers, both grade 11 as well as grade 12, scored above 60 and above, whereby some teachers even scored up to 90%. So when the results came out, we were not really surprised. We were actually just happy because we can finally say, oh yeah, the hard working and the sacrifice of us educators not going for school holidays, whereby you cannot enjoy your evening because you are working at night, finally paid off.
Yeah.
Yes.
Now, what advice would you give to other schools who have been ranking behind when it comes to academics of their learners? What advice would you give to them to also lift up and perhaps to the educator themselves and to the learners so that they can also be awarded awards in future?
Okay, well, the best advice that I can give, I can start with the learners. Learners really need to know why they are at school. A lot of learners, they come to school because their age mates are coming to school, but they don't really know